Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's politics podcast. We're back on our favourite roof in Parliament. It's Katie Balls, James Forsyth and Isabel Hardman. And we've not just had PMQs, we've had a spending round, which no one seems to have paid a great deal of attention to. James, let's start with PMQs. It was Boris's first outing today, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was a bad-tempered occasion, even, I think, by the usual standards of PMQs. I think you can tell when tensions are running high in the chamber. There's more clapping from the opposition benches than usual, and there was a lot of that today. There was an attack for Boris Johnson over his comment about women wearing the burqa looking like a letterbox, which was kind of very well received in the chamber, the attack on him, not the article itself. Margot James is one of the Tory MPs who lost the whip last night, attacked Boris Johnson over the influence of his chief advisor, Dominic Cummings, again getting applause. And then there was also kind of pointed questions about where are his Brexit negotiations plans from David Gawk. Dominic Grieve seemed to suggest, came kind of perilously close to suggesting that the Prime Minister had not been telling the truth about the reasons for proroguing Parliament when he said that it wasn't to do with Brexit, it was about a Queen's speech. And I think you could tell that this was a Prime Minister who has lost their majority in the House of Commons today. And slightly confusingly, those Tory rebels who are no longer under his whip were still sitting behind him. So some of it appeared like friendly fire when it very much wasn't friendly fire. I think the question is, how much does Boris Johnson's charge that Jeremy Corbyn is a kind of chlorinated chicken for not wanting an election, how much traction does that have? Because I think we are getting into a new debate about how much of a delay to an election we can have. There appears now to be quite a considerable move on the Labour side to say, no, let's not just delay this election until this legislation is on the books. Let's delay it until we force Boris Johnson to write this letter, because that will call, on October the 19th, that will cause him real problems. I personally don't think that is going to fly. I mean, there are several reasons for this. One, I think ultimately, if that was their strategy, they would find that Boris Johnson would resign and tell the Queen to call for Jeremy Corbyn. And he knows that signing up to any extension would completely kibosh his political strategy of putting back together the Leave vote. The second is, I don't think it is really sustainable for 5 weeks for Labour to resist an election. I mean, that would be very hard. You know, given some of the things that Labour have said about how, you know, people suffer every day under the Tories, you know, how could you justify, on their logic, continuing that suffering for 5 weeks? And the third is an important development today with Nicola Sturgeon saying that the SNP will vote for an election as soon as this no-deal legislation is on the books, which will probably be Friday or Monday. That is significant because when you add together the Tories 289, then you reduce the number, the SNP's 35 and the DUP 10, you get a majority. Now, lots of people say, but you need 2/3 of the House to call an election. The general thinking is that you don't actually, that if you went for a simple bill with the words, it's a kind of clever parliamentary ruse, this, you write, notwithstanding the Fixed Term Parliament Act, we're having an election on this day, because the Fixed Term Parliament Act is not considered so-called superior legislation, a simple majority would allow you to pass it. It would, admittedly, it would set the election date in stone. Now, some people say, but what if the House of Lords blocked that? I think for the unelected House of Lords to set about blocking an election would be quite hard. So I don't think we're going to get this full-on delay until October the 19th, as some people talk about. And I mean, there is an election coming soon. And I think today in the chamber was a reminder that Boris Johnson needs that election soon, because in the chamber, he is right now outnumbered, and you can tell.
Katie, as James said, the independents were sitting on the Conservative benches, and they weren't backwards in coming forwards with their questions, were they?
No, they weren't at all. And I think there is this sense, if you speak to the various independents today, that they're not going down without a fight. They might no longer technically be Conservative MPs, but I think they very much still view themselves as Conservatives. I spoke to one this morning who said to me that they believe Boris Johnson, they took Boris Johnson's promises on Brexit actually fairly seriously. The problem they had was they didn't trust Dominic Cummings. And I do think that is a recurring theme, speaking to a few of them, which is the sense that they now almost see the public enemy number one in the Tory party, not as Boris Johnson. Mm. I think they can see some pros still to Boris Johnson, but as his most senior advisor, Dominic Cummings, from the Vote Leave campaign. I don't personally think they're about to have much luck overthrowing him.
No.
I think the Dominic Cummings position in number 10 looks very secure. But I think it's interesting that in a way, by choosing to focus your ire on that person, I think maybe they're seeing there is more of a long-term sustainability in their position in the Conservative Party. Very keen to stress again this idea that Dominic Cummings may or may not be a Conservative Party member. Mm. We don't know because lobby briefings have not got an answer to us and so forth. But I think there is that pressure. And today too, I think there's a hope amongst some rebels that the various amendments later on, when you start to look at this bill. So for one example, the idea that some Labour MPs floated yesterday representing Leave seats, so Gloria De Piero and others, of trying to bring Theresa May's withdrawal agreement back.
There were some quite good facial expressions from her over the past 24 hours, haven't there?
Yeah, because we have missed that withdrawal agreement.
so much. It's
such a regular place on this podcast. But bringing that back for another vote. I was speaking to some Tory MPs who believe that there could be some Tories who will now join that because they will think that that is the best way to get a Brexit deal. Now, I don't think there's still a sense that will necessarily pass as an amendment, but I think they think it will show there is further division in the Conservative Party, and Boris Johnson's authority with his current Brexit plan is not just undermined by the MPs he is currently kicked out. It's actually more people who take issues. So I think that's one of the things they're looking at doing. But yeah, definitely, I think working out how to fight forward and what their next step is, rather than saying my parliamentary career or political career is over.
Yeah, they're definitely determined. Some of them have said they're standing down, but the ones who want to continue are definitely not settling in for a sort of quiet life of backbench obscurity. I have spoken to a few this morning who say that their priority now is to break the spell of Dominic Cummings. And what that really leads to isn't clear. I don't think, as you say, that he's not about to get sacked, but he might become part of a sort of branding operation by not just these ex-Tory rebels, these new independents, but also you can see that, you know, the other side have become completely obsessed with him, which isn't always a good thing for people, for parties to end up doing, because when you get obsessed with the sort of bogeyman in politics, you often miss your opponent's strengths.
Tory Party was obsessed with Alastair Campbell for years, during which Tony Blair repeatedly won elections.
Yep.
I tend to think that stories about advisors are Westminster stories.
Alastair Campbell was pretty notorious amongst the public as well, wasn't
he? By the end, and I think because of a kind of infamous dossier, that was, I think, the moment. And then the Hutton inquiry after he kind of left Downing Street, and obviously the events surrounding David Kelly's death. So I'm not sure that the kind of advisor stuff will happen. I think the more interesting question now is, in terms of this election, the decision that Boris Johnson took last night to take the whip away from these Tory MPs, this is going to cost the Tories. The decision that Boris Johnson took last night to kick out a bunch of MPs from his own party, that is clearly going to cost the Tories the support of voters who think like these MPs. So people who are very worried about no deal, or people who voted Tory in 2016, of which they're a surprisingly large amount, despite the fact that they'd voted Remain in the referendum and were quite keen on that idea. The question is, does he get more voters back into the Tory fold for this decision? Do you see Leave voters coming over to the Tories from the Brexit Party? Do you see Labour voters who voted Leave in 2016 saying, I've got to vote Tory now to get Brexit done? That is the kind of the strategic gamble that Boris Johnson has taken, that in expelling these MPs, he's going to bring in a whole host of new voters that would enable him to win an election. And that is what we are waiting to see, which is there any evidence that they're actually going to get people back to make up for the loss of these MPs?
Katie, we've also had the spending review this afternoon, which is normally the political event of the week. It's not really the event of its own hour today, is it?
Yeah, it didn't have too much of a build-up, I think partly because of all the drama that's been happening elsewhere. I also think Sajid Javid did get his moment at the dispatch box. There was some talk that it could be reduced to a written ministerial statement because the Commons order takeover, but that wasn't actually what it meant in terms of precedent. So Sarajevo did get his moment. I think that some felt he was an underwhelming presence in the chamber. However, I think if you look at the message, ultimately, lots of the things that are in the spending review today feed into a bigger theme, which is something the Numbers had been trying to push over the summer. So targeted spending in key domestic policy areas they want to push in a general election. I think the line that Sarajevo was trying to push was the idea that this is the end, is the end of a decade of austerity, is the end of that era, and trying to show that no, there'll be no government departmental cuts going forward from budgets, and again press the idea. So they are spending money. I think, still think they would say they are spending less money than Jeremy Corbyn, who will be spending money recklessly, according to Tories from now on. But they are going to have to work out again what their dividing line is now on finances. And I think that putting money into these departments, so law and order, so extra police forces, putting money into education as well, I think that they did feel that those were vulnerable areas for them at elections. So they're trying to, and also the NHS is an area they want to own an election. So you can see the message there. But I think they will just have to work out a little bit that if they are going to accuse of being Corbyn-lite, they need their own way of explaining that.
Yes, James, isn't the risk that they just end up being Labour-lite and reinforcing the message that Labour has, which is, yes, let's have a spending bonanza and we're going to give you free unicorns?
Less of a risk than what the Tories did in the 2017 election, when they de-weaponised the deficit by not promising to balance the books, even in that parliament. But at the same time, they were still stuck with a lack of spending policies, which you know, you talk to Tory MPs who lost their seat, they think that schools funding hurt them very badly. They think that the public still felt there should be more money spent on the NHS. I think what you saw in this spending review is that the Tory manifesto this time around isn't going to have any of those hostages to fortunes. As Katie said, they're trying to see where they're electorally vulnerable and deal with it. So, you know, there's more money for education. There's more money for social care to help local governments get over the hump on that. And notably, it's more money for social care now rather than some long-term reform package which might prove to be unpopular in a general election campaign. There's more money for defence just to kind of deal with that Tory vulnerability. And I think more money for law and order, because they worry that the Tories are in danger of losing their reputation as a party of law and order. There is obviously a risk here, but I don't think the Tories could, given that their position on Brexit, but I don't think the Tories could try and go into this and saying that, you know, we are the economically cautious party. I mean, a no-deal Brexit is not an economically cautious decision. It is, you know, it is a very bold decision, to put it mildly. And so I think what you see here is them trying to say, right, Theresa May, they are attempting a very similar electoral strategy to what Theresa May attempted in 2017, trying to essentially take Labour seats in the Midlands, the North East and Wales. I think what you saw in this spending review is an attempt to come up with a series of policies which mean that they've got answers in the doorstep on those places to reassure those voters. Say, look, you agree with us on Brexit and you can vote for us because we're also promising, you know, more money for the NHS, more police on the street, more money for your kids' school, all that kind of stuff. I think this is an attempt to basically reflect the realities of a new electoral coalition that the Tories are going after.
So, Katie, what are we going to see in the next few hours?
So we are going to now see the cross-party group of MPs, the Rebel Alliance, take control of the order paper. They now have control in the Commons and try and push through this legislation. And then eventually, once that process is completed, and we don't expect any of the rebels yesterday to back down, so I think we can quite assured with the numbers today, it will go to the House of Lords, where there's some talk trying to filibuster it, so talk it out, and mean therefore that perhaps it wouldn't have time to go through before Boris Johnson can prorogue Parliament. I think very few in Number 10 actually believe this plan is going to work, but it doesn't mean they're not going to try. So you have 90 lords, I think, who are put down to speak. And after each one speaks, there is a vote. So I think there'll be some perhaps comical scenes in terms of how long people can talk while staying on message, but perhaps with their own agenda in mind from then on.
Thank you, Katie, and thank you, James. And we'll be back later with another update on the chaos in Westminster. Thanks for listening.